Hey, it's the day at Le Mans with cars in the background because qualifying, first round of qualifying is almost over. My friend Graham Goodwin, tell our listeners on this lovely podcast presented by Cooper Tires what you are seeing in the darkness in France as qualifying is winding down.
Hi, everybody. Yes, indeed. You can hear it. The last 10 minutes or so of qualifying. It's like drama, just like in the stewards' decision that just come up, which is deleting lots of lap times for the provisional pole-setting car for exceeding fuel consumption per lap. Obviously, there's strict controls on what you can and can't do with fuel per lap, fuel per stint, etc. And it looks like the number 8, which in the hands of Kazuki Nakajima had set that 317.270 in what might be the only dry qualifying session, might be losing that time. But we'll wait and see. We're keeping an eye on that one. What are we seeing? Toto 1-2 within a tenth of a second of each other and setting those times within seconds of each other. It's the two Japanese drivers, Kaz Nakajima and Kamui Kobayashi in the 8 and then the 7. Subject to what happens with this Suez decision. After that, I think to a lot of people's surprise, it's the SMP racing car.
Yeah.
Stefan Sarrazin putting in a cracker, 3:19.4. So great lap times coming from there. There is a bit of a gap to the totals. We probably expected that certainly in qualifying.
But 2.2 seconds, Graham. That is the thing that I find, I don't know if encouraging is the right word. I didn't expect it to be any less than that, but it's actually, it's not as bad as I feared. So I would say that, if anything, is, I would say, a little bit of a saving grace.
If anything, I'll be honest with you, I expected the non-hybrids to be a little quicker than they currently are. I think they may be capable of something better than 3:19, which is what we got three of them in that bracket at the moment, both Rebellions and the SMP racing car. But we also expect that the Toyotas, we know the Toyotas can go quicker because they did this 14.7 last year in, frankly, much the same trim. So that's all good. We had a blinding lap from Jimmy Bruni in the number 91 Porsche. A full second and a half quicker than anybody else. And by the way, the anybody else principally is teammate in the number 92 car. But seconds later, pitched the car off the circuit. Has not moved since then. It was his first flying lap, and no one has come within a country mile of it. So I'm not quite sure whether Porsche will thank him or not for that one.
Yeah, and I'll mention here quickly at the end of Graham and I yapping, going to roll in a brief interview I did with our pal Scott Dixon, who's driving for the Ford Chip Ganassi team. And I don't remember if we were recording this part or not. Not that it was massively off the record, but on the subject of the chasm between the factory Porsches and the rest of the field, currently more than 1.5 seconds between Jimmy's fastest lap in his number 91 Porsche to the best non-Porsche from the Ford Chip Ganassi team, the UK outfit, the number 66. Dixie said something to the effect of, I wonder if Porsche is going to get their pee-pee slapped for having gone faster than they probably should. And this was after free practice one, mate. So the gap has only gotten bigger in qualifying. So
a second and a half bigger. I think they're pretty quick. I mean, you know, we won't go on again for a second day about balance of performance, but the frustration carries on that, you know, it's just ridiculous, to be blunt. But I don't expect we're going to see anybody at this stage showing us what they've got. That the teams at the back of this, if they are still playing games, are going to continue to play games into the race and hope for a balance of performance change before they get there. So, hey-ho, we'll wait and see. You would like to think that those issues will be taken note of by those that are crunching this data, if indeed they are crunching the data. Let's wait and see what transpires. It should be said, not the most exciting of qualifying sessions this evening. 2 hours, obviously, in full darkness. Some quick times coming in, continuing to come in. Just watching to see whether or not we might see some sector times coming forward. Norman Nato in the Dallara, the SMP car, going quickly at the moment and about to improve again. But in the LMP2 class, it's the Edex Sport car. So it's Michelin and Orica with Bullet Chatan, who is top of the tree with a 324.9. That's very fast indeed. That is non-hybrid factory pace from just some few years ago. That's pretty mercurial. 8 of the 10 LMP1's currently ahead of that pace. The two exceptions are, I'm afraid, again, the two Ginettas, although at the moment Leah Russell is tearing up the timing screens to try to join the train of LMP1 cars. Engine trouble, well, initially electrical troubles for both cars, then an engine change required for the 6, a starter motor change for the number 5. It's been a torrid time for the CEFC TRSM Racing Ginettas. They are being able to squeeze out some pace from the cars, but it's been a tough old night. Not yet had the chance to actually fit the low drag body kit either.
Yeah, the better part of 9 seconds separating the current leading Toyota. Again, depending on what gets taken away by the stewards, but yeah, the better part of 9 seconds standing between the fastest Toyota and the fastest Ginetta in the CEFC TRSM team, currently ninth in class. Look at LMP2, Graham. That's an area where the EDEX Sport, as you mentioned, followed by TDS. TDS, not a surprise to see them running second right now. I would say the EDEX side might be a bit of a kind surprise, as you mentioned, on the Michelins. You've got G-Drive behind them in third, Dragon Speed in fourth, Signatec Alpine in fifth, United Autosports in
yep,
sixth.
First of the Oricus.
First of the Ligiers. Now, granted, their fastest lap at 326.7, best from the EDEX Sport in the Oreca, 24.9. So that's another, hard to ignore the fact that we were talking almost 2 seconds between the best Oreca and the best Ligier, but also P6. You can work with P6, Graham. If you're P16 and that's the best Ligier, you're going into the race depressed. So we aren't expecting...
But as you're talking about that, actually trouble for the number 22 in the Hansa Paul DeRest of that car, observed as running slowly on track. So some issues there. We've had issues for one of the Aston Martins, the CF Sport car in the pits with seized rear, requiring the jacks in the blend lane to be used to get the car into the dollies, could not be moved. Searing onboard shots at the moment we're getting here of one of the Toyotas on a quick run, but I don't think it's going to be quick enough to change the kind of the qualifying order at the moment. The last 3 minutes
is Rebellion going seized out seized rear crack. Anything like a seized bottom? Or is that one
yes,
the same
indeed.
Thing? Okay.
In proper English, yes, it's exactly the same thing. In this instance, though, that their wheel wasn't turning around, boy.
But this, to your point, and I think as you're starting to drive home, Graham, this has not been a clean session. This has been one of lots of stoppages, offages, yellowages. This has been a messy one, messier than I thought we would have.
Yeah, absolutely right. Lots of offs into gravel. We've had one or two brushes with the barrier. In the earlier session, we have one free practice session, then followed by three qualifying sessions. Patrick Pilet, brush with the barrier that took away the front right bodywork of his Porsche, managed to get that car back and came out to set the session's fastest time. But Porsche absolutely dominated both classes in the free practice session. And this evening are doing much the same again in qualifying. It's top three in AM are all Porsches. And the top car in the AM class is ahead of, count them, five of the pro cars, including both Corvettes, the number 52 AF Corsa car, and both factory Aston Martins. In the earlier session, it was ahead of both the BMWs too. Matteo Caroli is again putting his stamp on this class and his reputation as a very, very quick young man. Julian Anslauer in the second Dempsey Proton car, second in GTM, again in amongst the pro cars. Then Gulf Racing, number 86 in the hands of Ben Barker, still ahead of one of the pro Aston Martins, which sits down in 55th position overall. That's the 95 car, that car rebuilt effectively from scratch after Marco Sorensen's huge accident at the test day. But we've got some pretty close gaps up and down the order here. It does look at the moment as if Porsche have got absolutely all the cards to play coming into this race in both GT classes. Orica similarly look to actually be in the pound seats for LMP2. Toyota on pace certainly do seem to have it as we enter the final minute of qualifying. this evening, at least two hour sessions tomorrow. But Toyota certainly seem to have it here this evening. Could we be looking at the pole sitting car already? Well, if the weather gods do what they look like they might tomorrow, it could well be Kaz Nakajima that's at pole position. And by the way, should remind you, not Fernando Alonso.
Yeah, and if we do get rain, just keep in mind that the only two cars in the field with all-wheel drive happen to be the Toyotas. So, yes, four rain tires strapped to two all-wheel drive cars should absolutely give the non-hybrid cars that are running with only rear-wheel drive a serious fit. But, yeah, interesting, Graham, again, that in GTE Pro, Porsche holds approximately a second and a half advantage over the next mark, wanting to challenge them in GTE Am. There is effectively a full 2 seconds between the best Porsche and the next mark there. This first year without Porsche in the overall class, it's very clear to me, I would say, that Porsche has done everything it can to make sure that while the 919 hybrids aren't there to thrill, their 911 RSRs have stepped up in both classes. Back to Scott Dixon's point, from a rival camp, mind you, we're not so much getting into BOP debate again, but knowing that the ACO / FIA has made a pre-race adjustment on Friday to peg back GT cars that they felt were out of what they expected, you have to wonder if Porsche has done themselves no favors by having cars as fast as they are right out of the gate.
I tend to agree with you. We've still got quick times coming in as some other cars are crossing the line to take the checkered flag now. We're past midnight here at the Le Mans 24 hours meeting and the first of two qualifying days. So past midnight, 10 till midnight tonight, and then it is 7 till 9 tomorrow evening with a further session to midnight to finish the pre-race action. 6 hours of qualifying track time following on from 4 hours of free practice. No major improvements at the top at the moment. We've still got a couple of the quick cars out there as just to finish off the session. Kazuki Nakajima puts in the very fastest time of the session to complete a 3:20.504, fastest final sector time there from Kaz. It'll be no improvement on the 317. A couple of LMP2 cars making improvements and putting themselves a bit further up the 20-car order. So the biggest question, I guess, coming into tomorrow, MP, is whether or not we're going to get rain. And if we do, that will surely mean that the grid, for the most part,
has been
probably
set.
Not quite.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, before we roll in, our boy Scott Dixon, winner of the Texas IndyCar race Saturday night and current leader of the IndyCar Championship. Tell us what to look forward to either coming out tonight or tomorrow on dailysportscar.com and also racer.com.
Lots of conversations still to come from the chats we've had with people around the paddock. And principally, some of the Rebellion drivers have been chatting to us about their hopes and aspirations. You can expect some, I think, some Twitterage. There's been a little bit of stuff coming from the BBC of all bodies, having a bit of a go, methinks, rather negative attitude and start to this session, asking the question as to whether or not Toyota are trying to skew the result here in favour of the potential win from Alonso. It's always great to see a public service broadcaster taking that kind of attitude at a race with 250,000 people and two world champions, don't you think? But hey-ho, we'll deal with that one as we come to it. Hoping Tung just crosses the line. He's just improved under a 3:28, but not vaulting up the order. So lots of chat from the paddock. Lots going on here. Jenson Button got engaged yesterday, would you believe? So congratulations to JB. That's a nice way to start your Le Mans week. Lots going on, not a lot of huge headlines yet. Most of those, I think, are going to come in the wake of the ACO's press conference on Friday, when we'll hear, as we've discussed more than once, MP, the shape of regulations for the top class, the future top class of this race from 2020 onwards, and then from 2024 onwards. We get into conversations about anniversaries for Gulf Racing tomorrow, I hope. Hopefully be able to bring a bit of a chat with a bit of a hero of years not that long past, I'm off down to the hospitality area for a chat with one David Brabham. And Brabs is going to show me the new Brabham BT62. I'll see whether we can get a bit of that on tape.
Show you that or up. Give you the keys to? Because if it's sadly, show you, that's a waste of your time. Don't go.
Sadly, it's only the show car. The actual car down under, cars are being built down under. This is the $1 million track only car, but marks a bit of a statement of intent for the Brabham Mark and its backers to get back into motorsports. And they are talking about bringing something, whether or not it'll be the BT62 or something similar, back to Le Mans. And that would be great. Perhaps, of course, a previous winner of this great race.
I love the sound of all of it. DailySportsCar.com. That's where you will find the good works of Graham Goodwin, Stephen Kilby, and more of the team, both words and photos. And we're also kind enough to have your young man Stephen Kilby knocking out content for racer.com along with a little bit of the support stuff that I am sending in as well. So it's past midnight, time for you to get to work. You got session reports and stuff to do. It's only 3 o'clock here in California, but thank you, mate, for making time here in the middle of the session for our Day at Le Mans episode here on Wednesday. Now we're going to roll into our man Scott Dixon to close out the episode. Is that Scott Dixon?
Hi, man. How are you?
Good, mate. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad.
Well, I know you're trying to scramble between the end of practice, get some dinner, and then qualifying coming up, so I don't want to keep you too long, Dix, but thought it might be fun to just talk about what it's like coming into Le Mans for the third time as the most recent IndyCar winner. I mean, you know, this isn't your first time taking part in the 24-hour, but I'm guessing it must feel pretty darn cool to be with the Ganassi folks, knowing that just a couple days in Texas put a whooping on folks.
Yeah, you know, Texas was crazy. The car was just, you know, really hooked up. Strategy was good. You know, the pit stops were fantastic. It's just one of those races you don't get too often, you know. So it was a lot of fun. You know, maybe not so good for the race itself, but you know, for us, it was really good. But yeah, coming here. You know, last year I was pretty miserable coming here, you know, just with my fractured ankle and then having another crash in Texas, you know, it banged my foot again pretty hard. So I think this was the worst kind of part of my year as far as the way, you know, I felt physically. And then, you know, coming into this year, it's a lot different, you know, coming off a win and then you know, being 100% health-wise is always nice. So, yeah, looking forward to it. You know, Le Mans, it's a lot of fun. It's quite drawn out, right? You know, it's kind of a little bit like Daytona, but worse, because you get here on a Monday and then you don't really do anything until Wednesday night. So it maybe helps to get over the jet lag a little bit. But yeah, looking forward to the race, man.
So Dix, we saw obviously with Alonso coming into Indy last year that was pretty cool for us who live and breathe IndyCar and North American racing to have a high-profile guest come in. What's it like for you heading to Le Mans and folks maybe, A, recognizing that you are, you know, one of the stars of North American racing? Do you get any feeling from either the drivers or fans there that, like, oh, cool, Scott Dixon's here? Or do they just tell you to F off and go back to New Zealand?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that the fans are really, really knowledgeable here, right? Like, you get a lot of, you actually get some crossover too, you know? Like, you'll see people during our season in America, the diehard fans, and you'll see them in pit, you know, in the pit area here too. But, yeah, you know, I think that, you know, there's a ton of people trying to get autographs the whole time. You know, I think the Alonso factor is always good for any series outside of F1, right? Like, you know, when he turns up, it's definitely a big deal, and it's cool to see, you know, how he's received. And, you know, hopefully he should be in a pretty good position considering, you know, the formula right now. And, you know, they could only possibly just be racing their teammates, but, you know, he's obviously going for the outright win. But, yeah, you know, I think, you know, this is my third year now, so it's a bit of the norm, I guess, which is kind of cool to be able to come back and continue racing here. But yeah, I don't know. The fans are really cool here, really knowledgeable, and you know.
How I don't know if strange is the word, dicks, but we've got you there as an Indy 500 winner. You've got TK there, Indy 500 winner. Now we have Montoya there for the first time with two Indy 500 wins. You know, and there are other IndyCar drivers taking part. But is it still feel a little bit strange, even though this is your third time there, that as someone who's won one of the three Triple Crown events, you're still there in one of the subcategories? Or has that become more normal for you?
I don't know. I think you get so immersed, right, in your own championship and your own series. You know, it's like even when you're in the pits or you know, watching the TVs or whatever, it's, you know, everything is only your category. So it's kind of like you're in your zone as such, and you don't really notice the bigger picture, which is quite odd. And I find that even when we do the IMSA races, you know, you don't even really know who's winning in the prototype. You know, you're just so focused on this one. And I think this category is probably one of the toughest. I think it is the toughest.
Yeah.
You know, 17 cars this year, you know, more manufacturers, you know, they're all pretty tight. You know, whereas prototype, it's really, even an LMP2, you know, I think unless you're in one of, you know, or one of two cars in LMP1 and then one of maybe five or six in LMP2, you know, you just got to hope, you know, the others have mechanicals and you can kind of win that way. But, you know, ours, I think, is just so stacked, apart from the Porsches right now. But, yeah. So, I guess it's different looking at it that way. It's kind of cool to see a lot of familiar faces, you know, even when we're doing the photo, you know, the Tata, Alonso, or Juan, or, you know, Jensen, or, you know, it's good to... It's kind of like Daytona in a similar way, just on a, you know, this is a much bigger scale, but to have those, you know, points to catch up with people that you haven't seen for quite a lot of time.
Last question for you, Dick. So, you've got a pretty stacked team in terms of talent. You've obviously get to, you know, race with the team here in IMSA a couple times per year as well. Is it fun just getting a chance to come together with some who you don't always get to see, whether it's a Harry Tinknoll or Andy Prio or whomever, and, you know, what kind of camaraderie is there either in the hospitality or in the garages with you and, again, fairly impressive driver roster there at Ford?
Yeah, it is cool. Again, really, it's only really once a year that we get to cross paths. You know, there was it was only last year maybe we did you know, the four at Daytona, and that, you know, was even a bit split up too as far as the drivers. But yeah, you know, it's the same sort of deal, right? You get to catch up a ton. You know, Harry, I get to see it some of the IMSA races. That's the Mazda deal, things like that. But yeah, you know, it's again, you're in your zone, right? So even the US team is split from the UK team. Yeah, we eat at the same hospitality, but the drivers are normally pretty much always together, just because we use the same areas, we're doing the same things, you know, same PR schedules, you know, et cetera. So yeah, it's you know, these are friends, you know, customers' friends that, you know, you get to see maybe once or twice a year, so it's a lot to catch up on.